chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Heavyweight boxing champion Gene Tunney was the son of Irish immigrants, and he was also a voracious reader. And but Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw loved boxing. Nevertheless, it was a surprise to many when these two people became close friends. But the friendship is a remarkable one, and it's now the subject of a biography, memoir, the story of the friendship by Gene Tunney's son, Jay. The book is called The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and George Bernard Shaw. Jay is in Chapel Hill visiting friends, and he's appearing at both at Flyleaf there Friday at 4:30 and at McIntyre's on Saturday at 11 o'clock, and with us right now. Jay, welcome.
Thanks so much, DJ.
Well, tell us, this is a project that has consumed a large part of your life.
True.
And it's reflected in the beautiful book, both in terms of the extraordinarily detailed memories and wonderful photographs of your family. So tell us about your journey in this book.
Well, it's kind of a long story. You're right. It's taken a big chunk out of my life, the latter part of my life. And I am very glad I have taken 11 and a half to 12 years doing this one. I'm not so sure there will be a sequel. But I've had a wonderful time, a learning experience putting this thing together. I've been able to interview members of my family, immediate family and extended family, like my siblings. And then my cousins, and been able also to have my mother. Thank gosh, she had been around until she died several years ago at 101. I must have had 7 hours, 8 hours of tape conversation with her. But it all really began about 10, 11 years ago in the year 2000 when the BBC. And I got together on a radio show about this same story, and it was called The Master and the Boy. And BBC produced a 30-minute radio show, and it was very popular. It played to millions of people around the world. It didn't play here in the States.
This was an idea, Jay, that developed out of Britain and an interest in Shaw?
Actually, it came from me.
Ah.
It was my idea to begin with, and I sold it to the BBC.
Sold it to the BBC, yeah. Whereas it didn't get picked up in the U.S. The British saw the story aspect of...
Because of Shaw, you know, and they always admired Dad. The Brits always admired Gene Tunney.
Let's talk just a little bit. I don't want to interrupt this. Yeah, I want to interrupt this story a little bit, but because when I was growing up, your dad... You know, we talked, this Gentleman Jim figure was a heroic guy that you thought, didn't think of boxers as gentlemen. But in the modern generations might not know. Tell us a little bit about your dad, and then tell us a little bit about George Bernard Shaw.
Well, Dad came from the poorest kind of circumstance in Greenwich Village, New York, many years ago in the late 1800s. And he was born on the docks of Greenwich Village before Greenwich Village became gentrified. It was the docks. And it was some pretty rough living down there at that time. And he was one of seven. And he grew up in the streets, and a lot of fights, a lot of bullying going on, a lot of gang warfare in those days, and so he had a rather violent, even though he had a very loving home, especially from his mother. So he grew up that way. He went into the Marine Corps in the First World War, and then after the First World War, as a private in the Marine Corps, he went into boxing, professional boxing, and he had won the American Expeditionary Forces Championship.
Did he take up boxing in the service, or did some of it in the streets, clubs in New York area, or in Greenwich Village, or in Manhattan?
Clubs, it was the streets, but they had plenty of little gyms around town in those days, especially to keep the hardened, tough guys off the streets and bring them into the gym and train them and tame them a little bit.
So was your dad a street fighter kind of boxer?
He had been a street fighter. Self-protection, self-defense kind of fighter. He didn't go looking for fights. He wasn't that kind of a human being. He protected himself and his friends, he tried to. And so he felt that he'd been fighting right from the very beginning, since his dad first gave him boxing gloves for his 10th birthday. And so he was into that, but that wasn't his sensibility, you know. His sensibility was a more sensitive sort of guy, and I mean that in an ameliorative way, in a kind way, in a good way. And so his mother thought he should have been a priest, and perhaps in another lifetime he should have been. He had that kind of sensibility. He was a live and let live kind of a guy, and he was that sort of a human being. He was a caring fellow.
How did he move out of the Marine Corps into professional boxing? And was that
it was a natural bridge because he had become the light heavyweight champion in the AEF, the American Expeditionary Forces. And he had won that over in France, and became by after the war just to move. It's the only thing he knew, and it was the way to make money. And his family had no money, and so he had to make money. And that was the only thing.
What about schooling? We learn later that he's a big time reader and self educated person. What about formal schooling?
He had no formal schooling until he had to quit at 15, in order to make a living, and he did. And part of that's how he got into boxing, was really after quitting at age 15 from school. And GBS had to do that too, actually.
Is that 15. Right? Now, yeah. GBS is George Bernard Shaw. He's such an important figure that you abbreviate.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they became autodidacts, DJ, and they became self-educated guys, right. And particularly Dad. And he did it in his free time. He saw people he respected read. He had a doctor friend, Dr. Van Vliet of Greenwich Village, a Dutch extracted fellow, and he was a great reader, a great doctor, had a great library in his office, and Dad used to spend a lot of time there reading and imagining and reading.
When did your dad burst onto the scene as a national figure, someone that people started watching as a boxing figure?
I think when he came back after the war and started developing, climbing the ladder to the championship. He first became middleweight champion in 1922-23, and then light heavyweight champion in 1924-25 period. And I think it was when he became light heavyweight champion that people started recognizing him. Shaw saw newsreels of him in England in 1924, when he defeated Georges Carpentier, the great contender in those days and former champion. And that was a great victory. And Carpentier was European and was one of Shaw's favorite fighters of all things. Nobody knew that Shaw even liked boxing. But he saw Tunney and he said, "My, he reminds me of somebody I wrote a book about 50 years ago, a novel called Cashel Byron's Profession in 1882. And he was just stunned by the similarities.
What was it about your dad that Shaw identified with and thought, "Oh my golly, this young American or young Irish American has the qualities that I dreamed about when I wrote this 50 years earlier"?
First and foremost, he was the embodiment of intellect, of artfulness in the ring and spiritual excellence, all rolled into one. And don't forget the physical. Gene had tremendous strength.
He endurance.
He lasted every fight out.
And he was good looking. He was a good looking person.
He was a good looking person, and that's very true. I think Shaw was attracted by that. I think most of the male newsmen of the day were not so attracted by that. But anyway, that's another story. The women didn't mind it at all. They were women, some of the more elegant ladies started coming to ringside and to fights in those days, and that was quite something to see them suddenly be at the fights.
We're visiting with Jay Tunney, who's in Chapel Hill promoting his new book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw. And we'll continue the discussion about the book and about Jay's dad after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about a new book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw. Gene, the boxer and the playwright? Well, Jay Tunney, the son, or a son of Gene Tunney, has written this book to celebrate and to share the this unusual friendship between a British, maybe not a British playwright and acknowledged genius, and an American championship, world's heavyweight champion boxer. Jay, you're telling us a little bit about your dad, and I'm really curious about that moment when he burst on the scene. And you talked about these very attractive women who would come to watch him box because he was something different from what people were used to watching in the ringside.
Right.
And I'm interested in a particular woman who became interested in him, who became your mother. And can you tell us a little bit about how they got together? They came from different backgrounds. Tell us a little bit about your mom and dad.
Well, it's a story in itself. I guess I could have written the book just about that. She was a lady from Greenwich, Connecticut, and came from a rather famous family herself.
What was the where did the family's money come from?
It emanated from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, through the Carnegie family connection. Her grandfather, George Lauder, was the first cousin of Andrew Carnegie and was a partner one of the partners of the Carnegie Steel Company, and he acted as treasurer secretary of the company for many years, and was just like a brother.
So these two people grew up in entirely different entirely different backgrounds. I mean, they were
entirely different. And Gene came from Greenwich Village, New York, another Greenwich, a little different, and made that big leap. He one leap in one lifetime in those days was quite something, from being a poor Roman Catholic boy from the docks of Greenwich Village to the blue lawns of Greenwich, Connecticut. It happened. It did happen.
Well, how did they meet?
They met through a friend, Sam Pryor, who went on to become, he was a Yale man, Sam, and he went on to become executive vice president of Pan American, a great friend of Juan Tripp. Sam knew Dad in the war, as they were coming back from France during the First World War. They met on the ship. Coming back, Sam already knew Gene because Gene had won the AEF championship, and the soldiers and the Marines and Navy people knew. They all were great boxing fans in those days. You know, there were no other sports around at that time except maybe track, but boxing stood out and dominated. So everybody was interested in boxing. So Dad already had a name for himself coming back on that ship. But it
so people, excuse me, this just gets me all excited. So people already knew because of the performance in the service championships, really, or the
he'd gotten some publicity in the papers preceding.
So they were
his
sort of looking for it, and he was a little bit of a celebrity already.
He was a little bit, but he was a special kind of a guy in the ring. They liked the cut of his jib because he was brains, and he represented brains and brawn. He was a wonderful binary combination of this, and this is what stood out to
Shaw. And he
Shaw
was already this at this point in his life. This
he already was.
You can,
instinctively.
Yeah,
he
you
was
can,
a gentleman.
You can go to the web and see your dad boxing, and it's even today it stands out, at least for me, in terms of this sort of careful. I'm not going to get into any fight until I can see the opening, and until then, I'm going to make you work to get at me. It's a disciplined, almost a slowness of the slowness to engage that some people would say, "Hey, get in there and fight." You know, I came to see a fight.
That's right.
And
DJ.
And he's not going to be persuaded to get in it until he's ready.
That's very true. It's a classical way of fighting. It's the way the Greeks fought way back when they founded boxing. They began boxing way back 2,000-3,000 years ago. It's the manly art of self-defense, not the manly art of brawling and the manly art of bashing and smashing your opponent into the 10th row. That wasn't what it was all about.
Well, we were talking about, I not only get you off track, but I get myself off track, talking about this a celebrity coming back from Europe. He's and women are already interested in him. Would your mother's connection with your dad through her admiration of him as a boxer, or through something an introduction of just friends independently?
It was independent friendship, and it came from Sam Pryor, this Navy fellow that met Dad on the ship coming back from France. He came from Greenwich. Sam did. And Greenwich, Connecticut, and he's the one, he was the nexus, he was the bridge from Gene to Connecticut, Greenwich, Connecticut, and meeting Polly. And that's how they met, Polly Lauder through Sam Pryor's family. And it was very exciting in that way. And the more he gained in notoriety and recognition in the ring, the more Sam kept inviting him out to Greenwich to meet all the chicks out there in Greenwich. And one of them happened to be Polly Lauder, and it really clicked.
From the beginning, was it instantaneous, or did it take a little bit of courtship?
No, it took a bit of a courtship. They were very, Polly was very careful. She was very blue-blooded, blue-stocking type of
thing. So here's this Irish Catholic guy from Greenwich Village. Is there a worry on her part or on her parents' part?
Absolutely.
About this class difference?
Absolutely. He couldn't be as good as he seems to be. That's what their constant thinking was. But he was. He just came from a different background, but he was very romantic, and he was a great reader. He knew philosophy. He knew the romantic poets. He could quote Shakespeare. He could quote Shelley all night and day long. I mean, it was impressive. And here he could beat any man that he came across. He ended up with the finest boxing record in history.
At what stage in his career did he and Polly decide to get, did the two decide to get married?
Well, it was 1927. They really decided to get married about 6 months before Dad retired in July 1928. And this is after they'd known each other about a year and a half.
So the marriage was the new venture as he left boxing behind. Was that
It was very much the new venture, and a prize that matched the heavyweight title as far as Dad was concerned.
That's a lasting title.
And he always had Polly up on a pedestal her whole life.
Now, your dad was, many athletes back then and then today as well, do not are great champions and great athletes and are well compensated, but they they're not managers. Your dad apparently had a notion of business, both in terms of his sort of management of his
own managers. Own managers he managed,
and then afterwards as well.
And then afterwards as well, he had friendships. He was able to get into business in a very successful way because he had some very fine business friendships like Bernard Gimble, Sam Pryor too. Sam Pryor was a businessman
he had some money to invest, I guess, in these enterprises.
Darn right he did. He made some very good money and kept it from boxing. He's kept it better than any other boxer who ever lived.
Even though we look back at those times, there was no television and very little movie. I mean, there was some movie, but nevertheless, I was floored by your reports of the number of people who saw these championship boxing
staggering
matches.
Staggering.
How did they crowd them in? How could they see the match?
Well,
we're talking about more than 100,000 people to see a boxing.
That's very true. The ring was as big as a stamp, practically, especially in Soldier Field when they crowded in 120,000. It was the more people that had ever attended before or since a boxing fight or practically any sporting event. It just was, as I was saying, boxing dominated the sport, the air.
The part that people, I loved, your dad seemed like a very nice guy, but... maybe tough, maybe not, arrogant is not the
belligerent.
Right word.
Belligerent.
But he said, help me with this, he said, I'm never going to fight again unless I get half the gate, or something like that.
Way he was thinking in those days, because he had the inconvenience of being, starting to be booed by the fight fans. He wasn't a
terrible... Why did they boo him?
They didn't understand him. They didn't understand why he read books in his training camps and why he was being portrayed as a phony by the sports writers. And the sports writers portrayed him as a phony because
Jay Tooney, this is interesting because I misread this and I thought this is just a great businessman. What you're seeing is that if it had been an adoring crowd, he might not have been so tough on them in terms of demanding a take.
Exactly.
But if he's going to have to go out there and suffer these catcalls and everything, by golly, they're going to pay me for that.
That was the whole thinking. That was the whole dynamics at work then. And it was an unfair accusation that the press were making on Jane, that he was a... he was a high hat, and that he was a phony, and
so
these books were being used just for props. He didn't read those books.
Gentleman Jim was not a positive. You're saying a Gentleman Jim? That's always rung positive with me.
Gentleman Gene in his case.
Gentleman Gene, Gentleman Gene.
Get Corbett in there. But Dad read books, and he really read them. He really read them. Corbett, I don't think, was a reader. He was a great gentleman, Jim Corbett. Dad had that side to him, this contemplation. He was a man of action and a man of contemplation. And that turned on Shaw.
We're going to take a break and talk about Shaw. Yeah. But before we take the break, the point that you've made is that this was not a turn on for many boxing fans. They were put off a little bit.
Because
to cheer against, they would like for the big rough guy to beat up your dad.
That's right, because they had bloodlust. Remember, they loved blood. They loved to see blood, and they loved a killer in the ring like Jack Dempsey, a real tiger in the ring, and they love that. They prefer that. They're guttural. Their gut instinct is to prefer that. We were not exactly like Romans. Romans love to see people get killed in the ring.
Just like seeing them get beat up.
Yeah, we just like to see the blood flow. Don't kill them.
Well, one of the boxing fans really liked your dad for all of the reasons that you say some of the American boxing fans didn't, and that's George Bernard Shaw, and we're going to talk about Shaw and that friendship after this short break.
Fine.
Thank you.
chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about a brand new book. It's called The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw, written by Jay Tunney, our guest, and the son of the great world's heavyweight champion. We've been talking about your dad and your mom, and there's just so much more about your family to talk about. But the book is about the friendship between these two seemingly quite different people from quite different backgrounds. Tell us a little bit about Shaw, and then about how Shaw and Tunney met.
Well, Bernard Shaw, and people did call him Bernard Shaw. He didn't like the name George, so he never allowed people to add that name to his name.
But that's the way it is in the books.
It's truly.
His editors or his promoters must have said keep three names.
There is no question. The Shaw scholars don't want to see the name George there, and so they always make a remark about it. But. And in Britain or Ireland, you go there, they all call him Bernard Shaw. Bernard Shaw.
Yeah, and so, Bernard. I mean, you're one of the keepers of the Shaw legacy as well as your family's legacy.
Yes, a little bit.
So among you Shaw nuts, you all insist on not saying George Bernard Shaw, but Bernard Shaw.
Bernard Shaw. Yeah.
I want to pick this up because at a cocktail party, I want to grab somebody when they say George Bernard Shaw, and I'd say, don't you know that the Shaw people say Bernard Shaw?
Bernard.
I can do this. And I can make some people feel badly towards me for being. That's great information. So I'll try to do this, but you correct me. Bernard Shaw.
It's Bernard Shaw.
Tell us about Bernard Shaw.
And he started out, he was an Irish emigrant to England when he was about 20 years of age. And he came there and he had no money and no position. And the English looked down at the Irish anyway, perpetually. And so he started really with nothing. And he worked his way up. And he did a lot of things. He became a music critic, an art critic, a theater critic for various papers. And he also joined the Fabian Society, which is a socialistic society. And he wrote political tracts on socialism along with the Webb, Sidney Webb and Beatrice Webb. They founded it. And it finally became the London School of Economics. That's what it turned into. And so that was one side. But Shaw, his main, the way we know him, he was a great iconoclast during the Victorian period. He was an irascible Irishman with his pen, and he used to write things about the unfairness of the Victorian society, how money never trickled down to the poor people, and how poverty was prominent everywhere, and how it has to change. And he demanded a more socialistic society, a socialistic democracy, and so he had a wicked pen, and this is what he was noted for in his plays that he finally wrote. He wrote about 53 plays over a period of a half a century, and most of them were these lampoons. Most of his thinking in his plays were lampooning Victorian society.
Making fun of contemporary figures.
Yes, that's right. So he had a great social influence, an economic influence, and he had an influence on even religion because he was such an atheist. And he wrote about all subjects. He was a very knowledgeable human being. He was a genius, absolute genius. So the interesting thing is, though, he was a very, he was a pacifist. So that's a bit of a contradiction, a bit of a paradox.
A pacifist boxing fan.
A pacifist. He wanted to live and let live. He was very much into, he was a humanitarian. He wanted to live and let live. That was his mantra. And so it's interesting to see that he wanted to do it in a, he had a, he loved pugilism. He loved boxing. It was a, it was his way of doing. He was an Irishman. He loved belligerence. He loved standing up against institutions. He had that way about him. He to him, boxing was a metaphor for life. Struggling.
Well,
struggling, life is a struggle to combat and get through, to punch your way through social wrongs and to right the wrongs. And he did it with his pen instead of with his fist, the way Gene Tunney did it with his fist. It's one of the things he loved about Gene Tunney, being a boxer.
How did they meet? Who was the instigator of the first meeting, and how did that come about?
It was the novel. It was the novel that he wrote called Cashel Barnes' Profession, and when he wrote it in 1882, 1883, and he was only 27 years of age, and so then 50 years later, when Gene Tunney came aboard. Suddenly was there in the ring. Everybody said, my God, he looks like Cashel Barn. He kind of acts like Cashel Barn. He has that gentlemanly approach, the man of action and the man of contemplation, brains and brawn. My gosh, and Shaw looked at him, saw the first Dempsey fight on the newsreels in 1926. He says, my God, this is my guy. This is my creation. Cashel Barn, and who quit or retired undefeated from the ring. He became world champion in Shaw's book, and then retired after only 2 years of being champion. And he retired as champion, and he retired and to marry his woman Lydia Carew, an aristocrat in Irish society, English society. And he went on to have four children and then went on to have another whole life after boxing. He joined Parliament. He became a member of Parliament for 30 years after boxing, after being a champion. And nobody, and this is exactly the story of Gene Tunney's life.
So Shaw says, I got to meet this guy?
He says, I got to meet him.
And how did that first meeting come about?
They had an argument over the movie Hollywood wanted to make.
How did the meeting? Who set the meeting up? And where did they meet?
The meeting was Jesse Lasky. He was a producer at Hollywood, and he said to Shaw, he wrote Shaw a cable, said, "Look, we want to do a movie of Cashel Barnes' Profession. This is in 1926 when Gene Tunney was champion, and we want Gene Tunney to play the lead role, even as champion." And so we're going to give you this kind of money for the royalties.
Oh, and so it's Hollywood
It was Hollywood that brought them together. And Shaw wrote back and said, stuff it. Didn't exactly say that's how they met.
I have to interrupt this story for us to take a break. But then we're going to find out how they met and then a little bit about that friendship. We're talking about a new book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw. And we'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jay Tunney, who's in town promoting his new book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw. And we're talking about, if you joined us late, we're talking about the proper pronunciation. Shaw did not like to be called George Bernard Shaw. He preferred to be called Bernard Shaw. and I'm trying to learn that, and Jay Tunney's teaching me. These guys had, your dad and Shaw had a friendship. Just got a few minutes, but tell us some of the highlights of that friendship.
Well, I think they besides what we've just talked about, the boxing and the Cashel Byron nexus that they had, they were both Irishmen, even though Shaw was 41 years older than Dad and old enough practically to be his grandfather. They were a couple of Irishmen. They had the same kind of leg-pulling sense of humor, teasing, kind of a mischievous twinkle in the eye, always dancing eyes is what Shaw had, blue eyes. And they had this thing in common about books, you know, an Irishman, the land of saints and scholars. And they both honestly felt that they were special people in this way, given to book reading and
You had them vacation. In your book, you described their vacationing on Brioni. The Adriatic in what was then Italy, I guess, is now maybe Croatia.
Exactly.
And what did, when they were together, what did they do?
Well, they took many long walks together. Shaw talked a lot to Dad. He was really quite the teacher. He was very loquacious, never was quiet for a moment. But he gave Dad a chance to ask as many questions as he could.
Was it a sort of father-son type relationship, you
think? I would say so. He knew that Gene was in a mode of learning like he had never witnessed before, a young man being. Dad had climbed the mountain and ascended the top of physical sport of boxing, and now he was into the mental learning as much as he could in his life. And so Shaw was the vehicle to teach Dad everything that he was hungering for. And Shaw was flattered by this, that the young man listened to him and absorbed many things from classical music, Wagner and Mozart. And he used to sing Wagner on the pathways of Brioni.
One of the surprising aspects of the relationship for me in your description was that your dad was a pretty good businessman.
Yes.
And was he able to draw Shaw into business?
He tried. I mean, Shaw tried to draw him in. There was a bacon yeast company, which it was a replacement for bacon strips. Shaw was a vegetarian, so he wanted to make that into a powder. He had a powder form called bacon yeast, and he had an American businessman friend called Frischel, Kurt Frischel. And it wasn't successful, but I used to eat it, and it was delicious. I used to put it
so
on everything.
So they had a business venture
that didn't
had
work.
A different dimension. Well, it like, many, like yeah. most business ventures, but it was a good product, and it just wasn't right for the...
Exactly right. And Shaw was a vegetarian, and he tried these different things. He was he loved money. I'm sorry. He was a socialist, paradoxical. Well, he loved money.
We're familiar with
loving money.
No, well, they accuse us in Chapel Hill of being liberals, except when it comes to people trying to take our money away from us. And that's the
isn't that the truth?
That's the that's well. Now, before we stop, tell us a little bit. I mean, you know, the books and articles and all kinds of things are written about the strain of being the child of a celebrity, and on balance, I mean, is this? I mean, what was it like growing up with you know, as the child of a, you know, a very famous person?
It certainly had its advantages and disadvantages. I think at school nobody noticed who I was, and even in high school, but it began to happen during college. But you've got to remember, it's not as if I was the son of Bing Crosby or Frank Sinatra or something like that, D.G. I was the son of a fellow that had taken himself out of public life. He wanted to have a normal life after retiring at the top of the world in boxing and being an international celebrity the way he was. And he had such a... what he felt was a mistreatment by a press that didn't understand his personality or character, that he really got shy. He got very shy. He disappeared to North Stamford, Connecticut. He grew a family of four, just like Casual Byron, and then went on to have a wonderful career for 35, 40 years after boxing, just like Casual Byron. It was amazing.
So you were more like the son of a successful businessman than the son of a
really
world champion.
Really true. I really was, and it just was that way. And it only for my two brothers, too, and sister, it only... When we got into college, beyond college, is when people began to say, hey, aren't you Gene's son? Uh-huh. And a few people. But it was amazing how he receded, how he rather disappeared into the mist of time. He didn't try to stay out in front.
A great example which for all of us, and particularly for young athletes, say, here at Carolina, who have this moment of success, and then some go very smoothly into their life afterwards and not captured forever by the glory of, and others are never able to give up that moment of glory, and it's not a positive thing.
It is true.
And so many more things to talk about in your great book, The Prize Fighter and the Playwright, Gene Tunney and Bernard Shaw. Jay Tunney, the son of the world's champion and the author, is in Chapel Hill for visits to Flyleaf Books on Friday at 4:30 and McIntyre Saturday at 11. And thanks for sharing this great book with us and giving us a few extra stories.
Thank you, DG. Great pleasure.
Thanks to you for listening. This is DG Martin, Who's Talking. I'll be back here before you know it.